Have you ever stopped to think about how all the stuff we buy actually gets to us? You know, the food in the supermarket, that package you're waiting for?
Probably not often enough.
Right. There's this massive, incredibly complex world of logistics and transportation operating behind the scenes. It's like fundamental to everything, but mostly invisible.
It really is. A hidden engine, almost. The coordination involved, the networks. It's staggering when you actually look at it. Understanding this stuff, it isn't just interesting. It kind of shows you how our whole economy hangs together.
And that's exactly what we're trying to do here. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Our mission is simple. Cut through the complexity, give you a shortcut to understanding big, important topics.
Yep.
Today, we are diving deep into TFI International. You'll see it as TFII on the stock market. And look, this isn't just some trucking company. It's a giant in North American transportation and logistics. Maybe you haven't heard the name TFI International specifically.
But you've almost certainly interacted with their services without realizing it. They move a lot of goods across the continent.
Exactly. So for this deep dive, we've gathered a whole stack of material. We're talking comprehensive investment research, company reports, industry analysis, economic data, the works.
Yeah, we've really tried to cover the bases. We want to unpack TFI's pretty unique business model, look at their big strategic plays, how they handle the ups and downs of the freight world, because it definitely has ups and downs.
Oh, yeah.
And figure out what makes them tick, what makes them stand out. We'll get into the financials, the big challenges, like really big challenges they're tackling right now, and you know what to keep an eye on going forward.
Okay, let's start there. What is TFI International? You said it's not just a trucking company, it's a holding company. Why is that distinction so important right off the bat?
It's absolutely crucial. Holding company tells you it's not one single entity driving trucks under one banner. Think of it more like a parent company overseeing a huge family. Over 90 different operating companies, actually.
90? Wow.
Yeah, spread across the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And this isn't just random growth. It's built on a very disciplined strategy of buying other companies. That's the acquisition-driven growth part.
Okay.
But here's the twist. When they buy a company, they often keep the existing local management team in charge. It's decentralized.
Ah, interesting. So they buy them, but let them keep running things day to day.
Pretty much. It fosters this entrepreneurial vibe locally. Makes each company more agile, quicker to react to what's happening in their specific market. It's kind of like having the muscle of a giant, but the reflexes of a much smaller player.
That makes a lot of sense. And the person steering this whole ship is the chairman, president, and CEO, Alain Bédard. He's got this reputation, right, for being really good at spotting and buying these companies. What's his secret sauce in this decentralized setup?
He's definitely central to the TFI story. Bédard isn't just buying any company. He's known for identifying assets that are maybe underperforming or perhaps non-core divisions that larger companies want to shed.
Right, like fixer-uppers, but for logistics businesses.
Exactly. He buys them often accretively, meaning it helps TFI's earnings right away, and then applies TFI's operational know-how to optimize them, make them more profitable. He's also really pushed the company towards preferring asset-light operations. That's another key concept.
Okay, asset-light versus asset-heavy. Asset-heavy, I assume, means owning lots of trucks, warehouses, all that expensive physical stuff?
Correct. Lots of capital tied up in physical assets.
So what does asset-light look like for TFI, and why is that better, especially, you said, in a cyclical industry like this one?
So asset-light means relying more on things like freight brokerage, where they connect shippers with carriers without owning the trucks themselves or using independent owner-operators for trucking capacity, rather than owning every single truck in a massive fleet.
Ah, okay. Less upfront cost, less maintenance.
Precisely. It cuts down massively on capital expenditures. And the big benefit, it generates stronger, more consistent free cash flow because less cash is tied up in owning depreciating assets. Plus, it provides flexibility. When the market dips, which it inevitably does in freight,
they aren't stuck with huge fixed costs for idle equipment.
Exactly. They can scale back third-party capacity more easily. It makes them more resilient, more adaptable to those market swings.
So this leads to what seems like the core tension or maybe paradox at TFI. On one side, you have this long track record of success built on smart acquisitions and operational discipline. It clearly works.
Yep, the history speaks for itself.
But then, looking forward, their growth depends on continuing to execute these acquisitions flawlessly, integrating them. And that carries risk, right?
Mm.
Especially with the really big one, the T-Force Freight turnaround. Plus, they're so big now, they're just really exposed to the overall North American economy if things slow down.
They feel it. Absolutely. You've nailed the central tension. The TForce Freight project taking over UPS Freight was massive, game-changing scale. But that network had a reputation. It wasn't considered the most efficient LTL operation out there.
LTL being less than truckload.
Correct. So turning that ship around, integrating it, streamlining it, improving the routes, dealing with old issues, it's a monumental task. It's complex, high-stakes execution risk. And yes, their performance is absolutely tied to the economic heartbeat of North America. Freight demand drops. Rates soften.
Yeah.
It hits their top line immediately and puts huge pressure on keeping costs down.
Let's trace that growth story a bit. TFI wasn't always this giant. It started smaller, more regional in Canada, right? And then this massive expansion, mainly through buying companies. You mentioned over 140 acquisitions just since 2008. That's incredible.
It really is a story of inorganic growth, meaning growth by acquisition.
Okay.
They systematically bought up smaller, often private, regional carriers, niche specialists, or those non-core units we talked about.
Okay.
The strategy was consistent. Identify, acquire, integrate, optimize, repeat. And this completely reshaped the company. Look at the revenue mix. As of fiscal year 2023, about 66%, two-thirds of their revenue came from the United States.
Wow, up from being primarily Canadian before.
Well, exactly. It shows a very deliberate strategic shift towards the larger, more diverse U.S. market. That's where the big scale opportunities are.
And that decentralized model you mentioned, keeping local management, can you give an example of how that actually helps them be more responsive, like on the ground level?
Sure. Imagine, say, a TFI trucking subsidiary operating mainly in the U.S. Southeast. Maybe a big manufacturing plant announces an expansion there. The local TFI manager, who knows that market intimately,
they can jump on that opportunity quickly.
Right. They understand these specific needs, maybe adjust pricing or services, dedicate trucks, all without needing layers of approval from corporate headquarters miles away. Meanwhile, another TFI company up in, say, Alberta, might be adjusting its fleet to handle a surge in oil field equipment transport. That local agility, multiplied across 90-plus companies, is a huge advantage compared to a rigid top-down structure.
Got it. Okay, let's break down the business itself. TFI organizes its operations into four main segments. It helps to understand how these pieces fit together. What's the first one?
First up is Package and Courier, or P&C. This segment handles the fast, time-sensitive delivery stuff. Think letters, small packages, even some palletized freight that needs to move quickly.
Like express shipping.
Exactly. Its main market is Canada, using brands many Canadians would recognize, like Canpar Express, ICS Courier, Loomis Express. You can immediately see the connection here to e-commerce, right? Both B2C, business to consumer, stuff going to homes, and B2B, businesses shipping documents or parts to each other.
Makes sense. Okay, next up is a segment you highlighted earlier as being strategically critical, less than truckload, or LTL. Remind us what LTL is and why it's so vital for TFI.
Okay, so LTL isn't about filling a whole truck trailer with one customer shipment. It's about picking up smaller shipments from multiple customers, consolidating them in a terminal, transporting them efficiently along a main route that's the line haul, and then deconsolidating them at another terminal for final delivery.
Kind of like a shared ride for freight.
That's a great way to put it. And it's paramount, strategically crucial, because of that massive U.S. $800 million deal in 2021 to buy UPS Freight.
Which they renamed TForce Freight.
Correct. That single acquisition instantly made TFI one of the biggest LTL carriers in North America.
Yeah.
So successfully integrating TForce Freight, improving its efficiency, turning it around, that is seen as the key driver of TFI's future value. A lot hinges on getting that right.
Right. Then there's the truckload segment, or TL. This seems more straightforward, moving full trailers directly from shipper to receiver. But you mentioned it has subsegments.
Yes. Within TL, there are two main parts. First is specialized truckload. This involves freight that needs special equipment. Think flatbeds for construction materials or oversized machinery, tankers for liquids, things like that.
Okay.
And this is where the other big recent deal fits in, the acquisition of Daseke in April 2024. Daseke was a major player in flatbed and specialized hauling. Buying them significantly bulked up TFI's presence in this area, especially tied to the U.S. industrial economy.
So big move into industrial freight. What's the other TL part?
The other part is conventional truckload. This is what most people picture. Standard dry van trailers carrying general merchandise, consumer goods, that sort of thing. The everyday trucks you see everywhere.
Got it. And the fourth segment is logistics. You said this is the best example of their asset-light approach. What does this segment actually do?
This segment really embodies that asset-light philosophy. It offers services like freight brokerage, acting as the middleman connecting shippers who need loads moved with carriers who have available capacity. They also provide warehousing, distribution, and crucially, last-mile delivery services.
The final step to the customer's door.
Exactly. The beauty of this segment is its low capital intensity. TFIs need to own vast fleets or warehouses everywhere to offer these services. They leverage technology and partnerships. This makes the logistics segment incredibly flexible, able to scale up or down quickly with demand, and generally more resilient through those economic cycles we talked about. It's about efficiency and service without the heavy asset burden.
Okay, so that's the structure of TFI. But as you said, they operate in this bigger context, this North American freight market. And it's famously cyclical, tied right to the economy. We've been hearing about a freight recession, basically from 2023 through now mid-2025. What does that term actually mean for the companies involved?
Yeah, freight recession is the industry term for a prolonged rough patch. It generally means freight volumes are down. There's just less stuff needing to be shipped. You see businesses destocking inventories, trying to get rid of excess product rather than ordering more.
Which means fewer shipments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all this leads to a soft rate environment. Carriers just don't have much pricing power because there's more truck capacity available than freight needing to be moved. Competition gets intense, margins get squeezed. It's a challenging time for everyone in the industry.
And these tough conditions have really stuck around into mid-2025, haven't they? We're seeing weaker consumer spending, ongoing inflation, partly due to tariffs, high interest rates making borrowing expensive. It's all slowing down any kind of market rebound.
That's right. The recovery has been slower than many hoped.
And there's data to back this up. The U.S. Bureau of Transportation Statistics showed total North American cross-border freight value actually fell 4.9% in May 2025 compared to the year before. But here's the kicker for TFI, U.S.-Canada trade, which is so vital for them.
That fell even harder.
Yeah, down a whopping 12.7% year over year in May. What's the direct hit for a company like TFI when that specific trade lane weakens so much?
It's a direct blow, especially to their Canadian operations and their cross-border LTL and truckload segments. Fewer goods moving between the U.S. and Canada means fewer loads for their trucks, plain and simple. It puts immediate pressure on their revenue, on their volumes. In this kind of environment, operational efficiency isn't just nice to have, it's critical for survival. Controlling costs, optimizing every single mile. That becomes the absolute focus. Companies that can maintain or even improve profitability now are really showing their strength.
But it's not all headwinds. Despite the cyclical downturn, there's this massive long-term force reshaping the industry, the e-commerce revolution. It's funny, we take it for granted and I click a button, package arrives tomorrow, track it the whole way.
Right, seems seamless.
Okay.
But behind that seamlessness is a fundamental reshaping of supply chains.
How so?
Well, think about traditional retail. It was mostly B2B. Big shipments from manufacturers to distribution centers, then to stores. E-commerce flipped that. Now it's heavily B2C. Millions of individual packages going directly to homes every single day. This explosion in parcel volume has strained the old logistics networks, which just weren't built for this high-frequency, small-package world.
And this leads to the Amazon effect, right? Our expectations as consumers have totally changed. We want it fast, same day, next day. We want tracking. We want freer, cheap shipping and easy returns.
Exactly. Those aren't perks anymore. They're the baseline expectation. Mm-hmm. And meeting those expectations requires enormous investment from logistics providers. They have to pour money into technology, automation in warehouses and sorting centers, building out denser, faster delivery networks. There's no choice if you want to compete.
So it's a challenge, but also an opportunity for companies equipped for it.
Definitely. And this long-term trend is a significant tailwind for TFI. Their P&C segment in Canada, their LTL network handling larger e-commerce items, and their logistics segment providing warehousing and especially last mile delivery, These are all essential components of the e-commerce ecosystem. They are directly benefiting from this structural shift.
Okay, beyond the economic cycles in e-commerce, What are the other big structural challenges or shifts happening in the industry that TFI has to navigate? You mentioned labor shortages.
Yes. The shortage of qualified truck drivers is a chronic industry-wide problem. It's been an issue for years.
Why is it so hard to find and keep drivers?
It's a combination of factors. It's a demanding lifestyle, long hours away from home. The workforce is aging, with many experienced drivers retiring. And there are barriers to entry, getting the right licenses, training. It's not easy. Plus, younger generations maybe aren't as attracted to the profession.
And for companies like TFI, that means?
It means intense competition for the drivers who are available. That pushes up wages and benefits costs, a direct hit to operating expenses. It can also physically constrain their growth. Even if they have the demand and the trucks, If they can't seat those trucks with qualified drivers, they can't move the freight. It limits capacity.
Another huge factor is technological disruption. It feels like technology is changing everything in logistics now. AI for routes, robots in warehouses.
Absolutely. Technology is no longer just a nice to have. It's a critical differentiator. We're seeing AI used for dynamic route optimization, finding the best path in real time, and even for predicting freight demand patterns. Robotics and automation are speeding up sorting and handling in warehouses, reducing labor costs and errors.
And those transportation management systems, TMS?
Advanced TMS platforms are essential. They provide visibility across the supply chain, help manage capacity, track shipments, automate billing. They're the nerve center. For companies like TFI, investing heavily in these technologies isn't optional. It's fundamental to improving efficiency, lowering costs, providing better service, and just staying competitive. The game is increasingly about managing information as much as managing trucks.
Then there are the regulatory and environmental pressures. The push for greener transportation seems to be getting stronger. What does that mean long-term for companies running huge fleets of trucks?
It means potentially significant future costs. Transitioning from diesel to cleaner alternatives like electric or hydrogen trucks requires massive capital investment in new vehicles and the supporting infrastructure, charging stations, hydrogen fueling depots, which are still expensive and not widely available yet.
And potential carbon taxes, too.
That's another possibility. Regulations could impose taxes based on emissions or fuel consumption, which would directly increase operating costs. It's a long-term risk that could really ramp up both capital expenditures and operational expenses for the whole industry.
You mentioned TFI has a medium risk ESG rating from Sustainalytics. Does that reflect these kinds of concerns?
Yes. That 20.1 rating indicates that Sustainalytics sees TFI as having material exposure to environmental, social, and governance risks common in their industry, including these transition risks. It doesn't mean they're managing it poorly, necessarily, but it highlights that these are factors investors need to watch. How is the company planning and budgeting for decarbonization down the road?
We also need to talk about industry consolidation. You describe the North American market, especially truckload, as highly fragmented. Why is that, and how does it help a company like TFI?
It's fragmented, largely due to its history. Lots of small, family-owned carriers, relatively low barriers to entry for starting a small operation. You have thousands of these smaller players, but many of them lack the scale, the capital, the technology, or the diverse service offerings to really compete effectively, especially during downturns or with rising customer expectations.
So when times get tough.
Exactly. When the cycle turns down or when owners want to retire, these smaller companies become acquisition targets. This creates a fertile environment, as the analysts say, for well-capitalized consolidators like TFI.
And this really plays into TFI's core strategy, doesn't it? This combination of cyclical downturns squeezing smaller players, plus the need for everyone to invest heavily in tech and maybe greener fleets. It creates a perfect storm for a company with cash.
Precisely. Smaller operators struggle to afford the big tech investments and survive a freight recession. TFI, with its strong free cash flow generation, has the financial firepower to act countercyclically.
Meaning they buy when things are cheap.
Exactly. They can acquire these struggling competitors or non-core assets at depressed valuations, integrate them, apply their operational improvements, and then benefit disproportionately when the market eventually recovers. It's a key part of their long-term value creation strategy, using downturns as opportunities.
So TFI is definitely a major player, but who are they actually competing against day to day? It sounds like it varies depending on the business segment.
It absolutely does. In that critical LTL segment, they're up against some heavy hitters. Companies like Old Dominion Freight Line, ODFL, XPO, Saia, ArcBest. These are large established players with extensive networks.
Okay. And in the other areas?
In package and courier, particularly in Canada, they compete with the integrated giants like FedEx and UPS and Canada Post. In truckload, it's a mix. They compete with large national carriers like Knight-Swift, Schneider, Ferner, but also countless regional and specialized carriers. And in logistics and brokerage, it's a very fragmented field with companies like C.H. Robinson, Echo Global, and many, many others. So yeah, a diverse set of rivals.
Despite that tough competition, TFI has managed to carve out some distinct advantages, competitive moats, as they're often called. Let's revisit that decentralized operating model. How does that function as a moat?
It's a unique structural advantage. By keeping local management empowered, they maintain that agility and market responsiveness we talked about. But they overlay that with the benefits of scale from the parent company, things like purchasing power for fuel or equipment, access to capital, shared technology platforms, and strategic direction. It's hard for competitors to replicate that combination of local entrepreneurship and centralized strength.
And their acquisition skill, you called it a core competency. How does that repeated success in M&A become a sustainable advantage?
It's probably their strongest moat. CEO Alain Bédard and his team have honed this disciplined, repeatable playbook over decades. They know how to identify the right targets, often overlooked or underloved assets, structure deals accretively, and most importantly, integrate and optimize them effectively. It's not just buying companies, it's a process for creating value from those acquisitions. That consistent execution is very difficult for others to match.
Then there's the asset light preference. How does consciously choosing not to own everything provide a competitive edge?
It provides crucial financial and operational flexibility. By using brokers, independent contractors, and leasing, they avoid tying up billions in capital in trucks and warehouses. This means higher returns on invested capital. It also means they can adjust their capacity much faster to match market demand, scaling up in booms, scaling down in busts, without the massive fixed costs of an asset-heavy model. That resilience is a huge advantage in a cyclical industry.
And finally, network density and scale. They have, what, over 635 facilities across North America? How does that sheer size create a barrier?
That scale creates significant barriers to entry. Building out a network that dense takes immense time and capital, something a new entrant just can't easily do. For TFI, it allows for much better route optimization, reducing costly empty miles. It enables them to offer more reliable, faster service across more lanes. It creates operational efficiencies that smaller players with sparser networks just can't achieve. Scale breeds efficiency, which reinforces their competitive position.
But that decentralized model, while a strength, must also be complex to manage, right? Overseeing 90-plus distinct companies that take serious oversight. And you mentioned Alain Bédard is central to this. This sounds like classic key person risk. How significant is that for TFI?
It's a very real consideration. Bedard's leadership, his vision for M&A, his capital allocation discipline, it's deeply embedded in TFI's success formula. The decentralized model works because of the strong strategic direction and financial control from the small corporate center he leads. So yes, his eventual transition represents a significant long-term uncertainty. Finding a successor who can replicate his specific blend of deal-making, operational focus, and strategic oversight will be a major challenge and is a key risk investors watch. The investment thesis is very much tied to his management philosophy.
Let's put TFI in context with its peers using some numbers. Looking at the data table, TFI's market cap is around $7 billion. Their profitability metrics, like net margin at 4.48% and return on equity at 15.45%, seem solid.
They are solid, absolutely respectable.
But they trail the absolute best-in-class operators, especially in LTL. What does that gap tell us?
It tells us there's room for improvement, particularly in operational efficiency. And this ties directly into valuation. Look at the price-to-earnings ratio, the PE. TFI's is around 19.5. Compare that to top LTL players like Old Dominion at over 31, or Saia around 30, XPO near 37.
So TFI is valued quite a bit lower based on earnings. Why the discount?
The market seems to be pricing in that execution risk we keep talking about, especially the TForce Freight turnaround, saying TFI is good, but they have this big ongoing project to improve efficiency in their largest segment. And there's still risk there. We're not giving them the same premium multiple as the companies that are already running at peak LTL efficiency.
Okay, let's dive into the numbers over the last 5 years, 2020 to 2024. This period was just wild COVID hit, then a massive freight boom, then the huge UPS freight deal, followed by the freight recession. How did TFI's top line, their revenue, reflect all that chaos?
The numbers really paint that picture vividly. You see total revenue at about $3.8 billion in 2020, then boom, the UPS freight deal closes in April 2021. Revenue nearly doubles that year to $7.2 billion.
Wow, almost double in 1 year.
Yeah, and it kept climbing into 2022, reaching $8.8 billion as the integration continued, and the freight market was still strong. But then you see the freight recession bite in 2023, with revenue dipping back to $7.5 billion. It clearly shows both the transformative impact of that huge acquisition and the company's sensitivity to the broader market cycle.
But what's striking is the cash flow store during that same volatile period. Net cash from operations went from $611 million in 2020 steadily up to over $1 billion in 2024. And free cash flow, FCF, the cash left after everything went from $545 million in 2020 to nearly $770 million in 2024. How did cash flow stay so strong when revenue was bouncing around?
This is where that asset-light model and operational discipline really shine. Even when revenue fluctuates, TFI has shown a remarkable ability to consistently generate strong operating cash flow and, crucially, free cash flow. That $769 million in FCF in 2024, a really tough year for freight, is impressive. It shows they manage their working capital well, control costs, and aren't burdened by excessive capital spending. This SCF generation is their engine. It funds everything else.
If we break it down by segment, what are the key performance trends we see over those years?
The most dramatic story is LTL, obviously. Revenue explodes from around $500 million in 2020 to over $3.2 billion by 2022 after the TForce acquisition. It became a core pillar almost overnight. You also saw strong growth in truckload and logistics during the post-COVID boom. But then, the other side of the coin, operating income, the actual profit from operations, took a hit in LTL and truckload in 2023 and 2024. That shows the margin pressure from the freight recession, lower rates, persistent costs squeezing profitability, despite still high revenues.
How's their balance sheet looking? You mentioned manageable debt. What was that ratio again?
As of the second quarter of 2025, their funded debt to EBITDA ratio was 2.4 times. For a company generating this much cash flow, that's generally seen as a comfortable, manageable level of debt. It's not overly leveraged.
Meaning they have borrowing capacity if they need it.
Exactly. It gives them financial flexibility for future acquisitions or just weathering further market turbulence without being financially strained.
And back to that free cash flow, $768.6 million in the weak year of 2024. And it continued strong into 2025 with $182 million in Q2, up 20% year over year. Why is hammering this FCF point so important for understanding TFI?
Because it underpins everything they do strategically. It's the fuel for their M&A engine. It supports their organic investments. It allows them to consistently return capital to shareholders via dividends and buybacks. Generating this level of cash, especially when the market is weak, gives them options that many competitors simply don't have. It's a huge strategic advantage.
Let's use the most recent results, Q2 2025, as a case study for how they're managing this downturn. Revenue was actually down 10% year over year, excluding fuel surcharges. That sounds bad on the surface.
Right. $1.8 billion versus $2.2 billion the year before. Top line pressure is evident.
But T operating income rose to $170 million, and the operating margin jumped dramatically to 9.5%, way up from just 2.5% in Q2 2024. How do you square falling revenue with soaring margins?
This is the proof of their operational discipline in action. It shows management isn't just chasing volume at any cost. They're actively managing their freight mix, focusing on higher margin business, controlling costs aggressively, and improving efficiency. CEO Alain Bédard specifically mentioned solid margin performance across all segments and focusing on quality of revenue. They're willing to let go of less profitable freight to protect the bottom line. It's a smart, if sometimes painful, strategy in a weak market.
This perfectly sets up the discussion on the TForce Freight turnaround. This is the big one, right? The key initiative. They bought this less efficient network and now they need to fix it. You mentioned the main metric is the operating ratio, or operating expenses as a percentage of revenue. Why is OR the be-all and end-all for LTL?
In the LTL world, OR is king. It's the simplest, most direct measure of how efficiently you're running the network. Every point you'll lower the OR drops straight to the bottom line as profit. A low OR means you're spending less on fuel, labor, maintenance, claims, everything, for each dollar of revenue you bring in. When TFI bought UPS Freight, its OR was known to be high, meaning inefficient. Getting that number down is the core task.
So what are they actually doing to lower that OR at TForce Freight? What levers are they pulling?
They're attacking it from multiple angles. A big one is technology deploying new software, Optum, for better route planning. This applies to both the long-haul routes between terminals and the local pickup and delivery P&D routes. The goal is fewer miles driven, especially empty miles, and more efficient use of drivers and trucks.
Makes sense. What else?
They're also heavily focused on reducing cargo claims and accidents. Those are direct costs that hurt the OR. And they're looking at using AI for back office automation, things like billing or customer service tasks, to reduce administrative overhead. It's a multi-pronged effort to squeeze out inefficiencies everywhere.
And are these efforts showing up in the numbers yet? What's happening with that crucial OR?
Yes, we are seeing tangible progress.
Yeah.
In the first quarter of 2025, the U.S. LTL segment's OR was a concerning 98.9%. That's really high, almost spending a dollar to earn a dollar. But in the second quarter of 2025, it improved significantly, dropping to 94%.
Okay, 94% is still a long way from the 70s or low 80s where the best LTL carriers operate.
A very long way, no question.
But that 5-point drop in a single quarter, sequentially, that's a big move in the right direction, isn't it? What's the significance of seeing that kind of sequential improvement?
It's hugely significant. It's concrete evidence that the initiatives management is putting in place are actually starting to work. It shows they're gaining traction on the cost structure and network problems. It provides credibility to the turnaround story. While the destination is still far off, seeing that clear downward trajectory, especially dropping 5 points in one go, tells investors and the market that progress is being made. It builds confidence that this isn't just talk, they're executing.
Now, let's layer in the other big strategic move, the DaySeek acquisition in April 2024. This boosted their specialized truckload division, giving them more scale in the U.S. industrial sector. But you mentioned this came with near-term headwinds. What kind of challenges does this increased industrial exposure bring?
DaySeek focuses on things like flatbed hauling for construction, manufacturing, energy sectors. These industries are sensitive to economic conditions, but also specifically to things like trade policy and tariffs. Right now, there's uncertainty around U.S. trade policy, which makes industrial customers cautious. They might delay projects or investments if they aren't sure about future costs or regulations.
So DaySeek's customers might be pulling back a bit.
Exactly. TFI management has even mentioned this cautious demand from industrial customers due to that policy uncertainty. So while DaySeek adds scale long-term, the near-term challenge is navigating this soft patch in industrial demand while also integrating DaySeek's operations smoothly into TFI's existing specialized business. Getting that integration right amidst these market crosswinds is key for 2025 and into 2026.
Let's shift focus slightly to how TFI decides what to do with its money, its capital allocation strategy. You described it as very disciplined and hierarchical. What's the absolute top priority?
Priority number one, without a doubt, is strategic acquisitions. That's the primary engine for growth. But they have strict rules. Any acquisition must be immediately accretive to earnings per share and free cash flow it has to add to the bottom line right away. It needs to fit logically within their existing segments, be a strong cash generator itself, and ideally have a good management team they can keep in place. This discipline prevents them from overpaying or buying things that don't fit.
Okay, M&A is number one. What's next on the list?
Second is organic investment. This is the internal capital spending CapEx on their existing business. Buying new trucks, investing in terminals, upgrading technology. Reflecting that asset-light preference, their CapEx is relatively moderate. They guided around $200 million for all of 2025. They invest to maintain and optimize, but they aren't spending massive amounts compared to more asset-heavy companies.
And after acquisitions and internal investment, what happens with any leftover cash?
That excess free cash flow goes to shareholder returns. This comes in two forms: a growing dividend payment paid out quarterly, and opportunistic share repurchases, where the company buys back its own stock, which can boost the value of the remaining shares.
They seem pretty committed to this. What's their track record, and why bump up the dividend recently if the market was tough?
The track record is strong. They've returned about $2.3 billion to shareholders just since 2017, and they kept it up even in the downturn. In Q2 2025 alone, they spent $124 million on buybacks and dividends. That 13% dividend increase in late 2024 during the freight recession was a real statement. It signaled management's strong confidence in their future cash flow generation, despite the weak market. It basically said, we believe in our resilience and our ability to keep generating cash.
This leads to an interesting interpretation of their current strategy. You have a weak market, they're generating tons of cash, keeping internal spending moderate. It sounds like they're doing shareholder returns and building up financial capacity. Is management building a war chest for more deals?
That's exactly how many analysts interpret it. They're maintaining a strong balance sheet, generating robust FCF. It strongly suggests they are positioning themselves for future M&A. This downturn, while painful, creates opportunities. Weaker competitors become available at potentially attractive prices.
So they're getting ready to go shopping again when the time is right.
Looks that way. Holding back a bit on huge deals in the immediate term, returning cash to shareholders, but keeping their powder dry. A significant acquisition announcement, maybe later this year or in 2026, would confirm this counter-cyclical war chest strategy is playing out. Buy when others are forced to sell.
Looking forward, where will TFI's growth come from? Obviously, M&A is huge, but what about organic growth from the businesses they already own? What are the main levers there?
The single biggest organic growth lever, and it's more about profit growth than revenue growth, is the U.S. LTL margin expansion. Successfully turning around TForce Freight and closing that OR gap we talked about, taking it from 94% down towards the 80s, that alone could unlock hundreds of millions in operating income without acquiring anything new. It's massive potential value creation just from operational improvement.
Okay, that's the big one. What else?
There are others. Leveraging their combined U.S. and Canadian networks for cross-border synergies offers growth potential. Offering seamless service between the two countries is a valuable proposition. And continued investment in technology and efficiency across all segments, rolling out Optum further, using more AI can incrementally reduce costs and improve asset utilization, boosting organic profitability.
But inorganic growth, M&A, remains the cornerstone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there still enough fragmentation out there for this strategy to continue long term?
Oh, definitely. The North American transportation market, particularly truckload, is still incredibly fragmented. Thousands of small and medium-sized carriers. So, yes, there's a very long runway for TFI to continue its consolidation strategy for years to come, provided they maintain discipline. Management has signaled they're ready to get back to M&A in 2026, so they clearly see continued opportunity.
And how does their positioning for e-commerce fit into future growth?
It's a natural fit. Their packaging courier segment in Canada, their logistics arm doing warehousing and last mile delivery, even parts of their LTL network. They are all directly plugged into the e-commerce supply chain. As online retail continues to grow, the demand for these specific services grows with it. TFI is well placed to capture a significant share of that ongoing structural shift.
All right, we have to cover the risks too. No investment is risk-free. What are the big ones for TFI? Let's start with the obvious, macroeconomic and cyclical risks.
This is always number one for transportation companies. A prolonged recession, a sharp drop in consumer spending, or weak industrial production would mean less freight to move. Lower volumes, pressure on pricing.
Mm.
It hits their revenue and profitability directly. They're highly exposed to the health of the overall economy.
And since M&A is their growth engine, acquisition and integration risk must be huge. What happens if a big integration, like TForce Freight or Desaik, goes wrong?
It's their biggest internal risk. A failed integration can be incredibly costly, burning cash, distracting management, failing to deliver the promised synergies. If the TForce Freight turnaround stalls or fails to reach its goals, it would seriously undermine the investment case, given how central it is. Similarly, integrating Desaik smoothly is critical to justifying that purchase. Execution stumbles on big deals are very damaging.
What about operational and competitive risks? That driver shortage seems relentless.
Yes. The driver shortage remains a major constraint. It limits growth, can hurt service quality if they're short-staffed, and drives up wages. Fuel price volatility is another operational risk. Sudden spikes can hurt margins even with fuel surcharges. And the sheer intensity of competition, especially when demand is weak, constantly puts pressure on pricing and requires ongoing investment just to keep pace.
And lastly, regulatory and geopolitical risks. We touched on environmental rules. What about trade policy?
Environmental regulations forcing fleet decarbonization are a significant long-term capital expenditure risk. Geopolitically, TFI's large cross-border presence and growing exposure to the U.S. industrial sector via Desaik make them vulnerable to shifts in trade policy or tariffs. Uncertainty here can cause their customers to pause shipments or delay projects, directly impacting demand for TFI services, as management themselves have noted.
Okay, let's pull this all together through an investor's lens, focusing on valuation. TFI's stock price has been on a roller coaster over the past year. The 52-week range on the NYSE was huge, something like $72 to $158. What's driving that volatility?
That wide swing perfectly reflects the market's uncertainty and shifting sentiment around those two key themes: the state of the overall freight economy and the progress, or perceived lack thereof, on the TForce Freight turnaround. Good news on TForce or signs of market recovery sends the stock up. Bad news or delays send it down. Investors are laser-focused on those two narratives.
Looking at comparable company analysis, TFI's valuation is interesting. Its forward PE of around 19.6 is lower than top LTL peers like Saia, around 35, but higher than asset-heavy players like Ryder, around 14. What does that positioning tell you?
It tells you the market sees TFI as higher quality than a basic asset-heavy trucker, likely due to its asset-light elements and strong cash flow. But it's not yet willing to grant it the premium valuation of the most efficient pure-play LTL operators because of that TForce execution risk. The market's essentially saying, prove the turnaround, then maybe you'll get a higher multiple.
But then there's that levered free cash flow margin, almost 9%. You said that's way better than its peers. What's the significance of the market seemingly undervaluing this cash generation powerhouse while discounting its earnings?
This is potentially the most compelling part of the valuation story. The market seems fixated on the earnings risk, TForce or improvement, and might be overlooking TFI's demonstrated superior ability to generate cash. An 8.94% FCF margin is exceptional in this industry. It suggests the underlying business is healthier and more resilient than the earnings multiple alone might imply. This cash flow is what gives them strategic options, funds growth, and supports shareholder returns. It could be an undervalued strength.
This leads nicely into the idea of a sum of the parts SOTP valuation. Why is looking at TFI piece by piece potentially more revealing than just looking at the consolidated company?
Because TFI is so diverse. You have different businesses with different characteristics and potentially different intrinsic values. A blended multiple might obscure this. With SOTP, you try to value each segment separately.
So how would that look conceptually?
Well, the stable Canadian P&C and LTL businesses might deserve a higher, more stable multiple. The U.S. LTL, TForce, the catalyst is crystal clear. Sustained demonstrable margin improvement in the TForce Freight segment. If TFI can consistently show the market that the OR is coming down, that the turnaround is real and durable, that TForce can become a truly efficient LTL carrier, that could lead to a significant re-rating of that segment's value, lifting the entire company's valuation. That's the key narrative to watch.
Okay, let's bring it home for the listener. We've covered a lot. Let's quickly revisit those key questions. First, TFI's competitive advantage, is it durable?
It seems durable, yes. It's built on disciplined M&A execution and operational turnarounds, enabled by their structure and asset-light focus. As long as the industry stays fragmented and they maintain discipline, it should persist. The biggest threat is internal fumbling a major integration.
Second, their ability to hold up during downturns.
They've shown resilience. While not immune to volume declines, their focus on cost control and quality revenue allowed them to protect and even improve margins during the recent freight recession, which is impressive.
Third, capital allocation effectiveness.
Historically, excellent. They built the company through smart deals. The jury's still out on the most recent big ones, TForce and Dave Airy. Their ultimate success will determine the verdict on this current cycle of allocation.
Fourth, realistic growth prospects.
Near-term organic revenue growth looks muted due to the economy. The biggest driver near to medium term is margin expansion from the TForce turnaround. Long term, it's continued M&A consolidation, plus riding the e-commerce wave.
And fifth, how are they positioned for the next freight upcycle?
They seem very well positioned. They've used the downturn to streamline, improve efficiency, especially in US LTL, and maintain balance sheet strength thanks to that FCF. They're likely to emerge stronger, potentially having made opportunistic acquisitions while others were struggling. So if you're trying to follow this story, what should you watch? The single most critical metric, bar none, is that U.S. LTL segment operating ratio reported every quarter.
Lower is better.
Lower is better. Consistent sequential improvement. That's the green light. The turnaround is working. If it stalls, or worse, reverses, especially if the market is improving, that's a major red flag. Keep an eye on overall free cash flow, too, for financial health, and the debt to EBITDA ratio for discipline, and maybe track segment revenues just to see how the other parts are doing. But that US LTL OR, that's the number one thing.
Wow. Okay. So we've really gone deep on TFI International today. From understanding its unique structure as a holding company, its reliance on smart acquisitions, how it navigates these tough market cycles, and that really compelling financial picture, especially the cash flow.
Yeah, it's a complex company, but a fascinating case study in strategy and execution within a vital industry.
It really is. It's easy to just see trucks on the road, but digging into a company like TFI, you realize the layers of strategic thinking involved, when to buy, how to integrate, how to manage costs when things get tough. It shows how value can be created even in an industry that seems, on the surface, pretty straightforward.
Absolutely. It's about much more than just moving boxes from A to B. The discipline, the capital allocation, the operational focus, that's where the magic happens, so to speak.
It really makes you think. What other boring industries out there are hiding these complex stories of strategy and quiet transformation? Maybe something for you, our listeners, to ponder. Use what you learned today. Maybe look at the world of logistics a little differently next time a truck goes by or a package arrives.
Keep digging deep.
Exactly. Thanks so much for joining us on the Deep Dive.